And then I said, no action, no action required.
Yeah, you just have
they don't get it. It's so simple.
Yeah.
It's so simple. It's the mouth. There's no doing.
Their body image is as old-fashioned, as rear-view mirror. It's body. They think they got a chemical body. They haven't understood that they're discarnate first. And they don't understand how the Android meme shrinks your discarnateness, where you think you're back in your body and in charge of all the discarnate dimension. It's
yeah, but that's the thing now. At this stage of the campaign, people are going, Trump talks amazing. Like, now people are starting to accept him, that he's going to be president, and they're going, okay, great. He says these things, and it'd be really great if it's going to be as good as he says, but will he be able to do it? And it's like, it's not the fucking point. The point is he's changing. He's like giving an enema to the Android meme because it's backed up with the Bush Clinton world content.
Yeah. He's miming the present so accurately, everybody gets everything instantly in the chip body. They get to complain. Yeah. Every form of human expression they can have and be in the Android meme as it is now. Why wouldn't the presidential memes be something echoing, mirroring that back? We give you everything instantly. That's all. But people are thinking it in terms of hardware. They don't know they're getting it in software.
Yeah.
So it's pretty simple once you get it, what the appeal is, and he's a very important image right now. His image is important. I mean, he might not even be real. There could be people making a hologram or some advanced fucking science fiction technology that David Rockefeller came up with. But you don't have to worry about whether it's real or not. You just take it on its own terms. It's here. It's affecting. So let's analyze what it is in its own terms. Not whether it's real or not, or
Think they might get their potholes filled in if he gets elected.
Right, right. It's good. There could be a World War III because people will be so pissed off. This could lead to World War III.
Just from the talking. The talking alone can cause World War III.
If people are, they're causing it. I said in the McClellan thing, we are individually are 100 times worse than Hitler because of the environments we're wearing, what we're doing with our environments. We're inflicting on the rest of the world. We are fucking terrorists up the yin-yang, each one of us wearing, you know, your yuppie or post-yuppie technology. You're a dangerous phenomenon, and you're interacting with another billion similar dangerous people. It's too intense for people. That's why. And so you do not react as if it's about you. You know, it's your emotion, and you don't like this new wallpaper that's surrounded
but
you.
Isn't
to me,
he,
Trump's a fucking
wouldn't you,
mosquito.
Couldn't you?
He
yeah, but couldn't you say that
he's
Trump?
Around, I slap him down. I go, look, I pick up this fucking fly, and I point him out to you. Look at this. Look what it's made up of. And then it flies away. And then it buzzes around, buzzes me again, and then I slap it down and then fucking do another analysis, and it flies away. That's what it is. It's invasion.
Okay, so with the office of, you know, the presidency and what that represents archetypally in the electric, in the whatever environment we're in, fucking
right.
the no-nad or the fucking gonad or the whatever
end god.
The end god.
End god.
The end god.
We were talking about the house, like the source of power.
Yeah.
Houses.
It's the White House.
Yes. It's the White House.
Right.
And the new house,
the house of
is
White.
A guy tweeting. See, Don is not in his house. He is on the air interacting with every fucking body immediately. That's his home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
What were you going to say, Chad? You started to say, I think, a linear.
Okay, so he's the, you know how you say the president, whatever the president is at the time, reflects back the American environment, the Android meme. So Trump.
Yeah.
Could he be possibly, like, miming the process of ascension? Like, watching an ascending man ascend?
Yes.
Because there's a good chance he could crown himself king like Napoleon. And he could be, you know what I mean? Like, we could actually
he
see his coronation. And like, the whole,
you know,
yeah, the whole
miming,
the Android meme.
Here's what he's miming. Better Call Saul, that TV show. Breaking Bad, which Better Call Saul came out of. He's doing House of Cards. He's doing a Homeland, is it? The one with the woman who's a psychotic CIA agent.
Homeland.
Homeland. He's doing The Good Wife. He is doing all the major shows that have educated people in the last 5 years and made people very cynical about politics. like the, what's right. that one, the ambassador woman? There's one about the Secretary of State, I think she's called, or Ambassador Secretary, I think she's called. Another one. So all these TV shows that people have been binging on, they all form a subconscious icon. Trump's acting on it. He's living in it. He's Suits. That's another one, Suits. There's a lot of good TV yeah. shows that you can see, but especially Breaking Bad. He's Breaking Bad. He's taking his own power. Remember? The main guy
and
taking his power.
He was
up against this little stupid high school student of his who was a fucking nuisance, right? This stupid whiny kid. That is Hillary. Or the whole world.
Yeah.
That's the whole world for Trump.
Being dragged along.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's complaining about this idiocy he has to drag along. He's complained every, you guys don't get what's going on. I'm going to do something about it, he's saying. I'm going to get out of this mess. It's tremendous that no one's ever been so positively directive. They said he presented a dark speech, you know, at the convention. Well, no, he just laid out the problem. He's a doctor. He says, okay, here's the problem. This is our diagnosis. We got endless bullshit happening in every field of society. But I'm going to fix it. No one's ever been so negative about society while running for president, and then offer such a great solution.
I saw an article today. There's one of the Republican, like, I don't know what level he is, if he's in the House or what, but he said, like, he left the Republican Party. He changed his official party to no party, and he said he feels it's the right thing to do because he sees Trump as parallel to the rise of Adolf Hitler.
But so he's almost like leaving the country. Where is he going? What did he say he's doing?
Leaving. He left the Republican Party. So he's in the House of Representatives. I don't know what level he's on, Congress, whatever those levels are. He's in level of government. And he's so pissed that he's leaving the Republican Party because he doesn't want to be part of the Trump train. And he said it's because he thinks that there's so many similarities between the rise of Trump and the rise of Adolf Hitler.
He's projecting. See, most people live in the radio image. That's how caught up they are. They're that far back. So he's going to project this God radio Hitler thing. But the internet and the web too is an tactile interplay, and it's actually a friendly, intimate inner dialogue between people's beings. The old-fashioned guys will project Hitler as radio, but the new God is this tactile interplay, which Trump is acting out. So here is this. USA Today, some guy named David Mastio, after Hillary's convention, he says, election 2016 is over. He's announcing it's over. Oh. Trump won. Okay, so now watch how he writes this. He's not a fan of Trump. He goes, with no standards and no principles, Clinton and her allies are now just a punchline. So he says, with the possible exception of Jefferson Davis, that would be 1876, I think, way back there in the... after the Civil War, with the possible exception of Jefferson Davis, Donald Trump will be the worst president in American history. I know that sounds extreme. Now, he's announcing Trump's won, so it's going to be a pretty complex article. Ion sent me this. Ion knows the good stuff. He said, Bob, read this one. Just like we're all telling each other to read. Trump's in the, Ion's in the middle said, no, read this article. It's even better. he's participating. So are you still here, Rox?
Yes.
Yeah, because you might just click off. So I want you to hear this. With the possible exception of Jefferson Davis, Donald Trump will be the worst president in American history. I know that sounds extreme. No, not the Jefferson Davis part. Everyone agrees about that. But with the Democratic National Convention barely over and the sound of Hillary Clinton's voice still grating the ears of Bernie Brothers across the land, so it's like a circus, right? Bernie, Ringling Brothers, he calls it Bernie Brothers, all his supporters. So her voice is grating in the ears of Bernie Brothers across the land. I understand how it could seem a little early to write off candidate Clinton. The election is still 102 days away. Clinton's historic candidacy has a special appeal to the smarter half of the American electorate, and it is backed by both of America's first black presidents. Two? Who are they? By both of America's first black. Is there two presidents? Two Obamas? What's he
Mr.
mean by that?
And Mrs.
Yeah, maybe. Oh no, Bill Clinton was the first black president. Remember the black people in '92?
Yeah,
they said
right.
he was. That's their time. Yeah. Clinton. bill. It is backed by both of America's first black presidents. The Clinton machine features such finely tuned fundraising machinery that Tesla engineers, that would be Elon Musk. Is he Tesla? Mm-hmm. I think that's his car, right?
Yeah.
The Clinton machine features such finely tuned fundraising machinery that Tesla engineers turn greener at the very sight of the Clinton machine. It's like coal fusion. Its battle-hardened communications apparatus has already set records in selling high-efficiency American-fueled natural gas furnaces to Saudi Arabia. So they're talking about the Clinton Foundation, right? So the Clinton, so the mm-hmm. candidacy is backed by both black presidents. The Clinton machine features its finely tuned fundraising. Okay, yeah, that's Clinton Foundation. That Tesla engineer, so it's like they have coal fusion in fundraising. Tesla engineers turn greener at the very sight. Its battle-hardened communications apparatus has already set records in selling high-efficiency American fuel natural gas furnaces to Saudi royalty. Despite polls showing the deeply unpopular Clinton behind in the race against reality TV Republican Donald Trump, in spite of those polls, only a fool would bet against her. And yet, every time a Clintonite attacks Trump, it is getting hard not to giggle. Or at least titter, depending on your jocular orientation. So he's saying it's logical that Hillary would win, right? Only a fool would bet against her. But their communication ain't working. When Trump launches into a spittle-flecked tirade, you hear that spit? It's a spit coming out of Trump's mouth. When Trump launches into a spittle-flecked tirade against those Black Lives Matter radicals who think police should shoot fewer unarmed black men, the racism is so obvious it might as well have been written in the sky by the Blue Angels. But no one is listening anymore. When mild-mannered technocrat Mitt Romney was running for president, Clinton's obscure Obama administration colleague Joe Biden told a black audience that Republicans, quote, are going to put you all back in chains. So Biden was saying back in 2008 that they're going to put you all back. You must have heard that. I was scared to shit. That drove you to Switzerland, right, Bert? You got scared.
Bob, I was already in Switzerland.
You had already ran when Bush became president. Yeah, you knew this guy, the white guys are going to get you. So he's saying when mild-mannered technocrat Mitt Romney was running for president, so Joe Biden was making crazy statements about the Republicans. If you listen to Democrats, every Republican who has run for anything in my lifetime, says the writer, has Klan robes in their closet and secret Confederate memorabilia collection. Okay, that's what the Democrats think the Republicans are. Then he says, when Trump joked that maybe Russian President Vladimir Putin could find Clinton's missing emails, the Hillary-friendly precincts of Twitter erupted with accusations of Trump treason. So they got unbelievable what Trump said. In a nationally televised speech, Clinton's obscure Obama administration colleague, Leon Panetta, patted at an irresponsible Trump. So Leon Panetta was in a televised speech himself. He tut-tutted at a, quote, irresponsible, unquote, Trump, asking one of our, quote, adversaries to engage in hacking against the United States of America. So Panetta, he used to be head of staff for one of those presidents, Democratic guys, maybe Clinton. But they're accusing Trump of betraying the United States. And then this writer says, of course, foreign data or data theft is nothing to laugh at. But the pilferage of old yoga schedules and plans for a wedding long consummated hardly seemed the kind of thing to require the involvement of an old CIA director long retired. Oh, yeah, Leon Panetta was head of the CIA. So you got these old institutional guys who think that they have some kind of authority still, and they make fools of themselves. So he's complaining about this this releasing, hacking of Clinton's emails, and the wedding the emails are just an old yoga schedule. Who's that? Can't even remember his name. What is his name? Corbin, dragging Corbin. Another body to the fucking morgue. We heard that, Corbin. Even though you're on mute, we still heard it. Okay, so where were we? Anybody remember what I was doing? Help me get out of this. I don't know.
Yeah, the old
Was I reading something?
Politicians.
Yeah.
They think they still have something to say, but
right.
they have no idea of what's going on with the media. And
right. They're misfiring. You know, Trump holds up a little grape and they just try to nuke it. They're overreacting at the wrong things. So
yes, but you know, this comparing of Trump with Hitler, I think. Hitler actually saved Germany. The things were really terrible.
His first half of the 30s, he did a good job.
The inflation, it was like you go into a restaurant, and when you had to pay, the price was like millions more than when you came in. It was really crazy.
Well, the whole world liked Hitler. He was very popular. They had the Olympics there in 36. And the Olympics sort of fucked up it because they looked racist. But before that, in 35, everybody around the world was praising Hitler for saving Germany. People don't remember that.
And he actually did save...
For a few minutes,
actually.
Yeah.
No, actually, even as we say, they lost the war, but then they had to build the new industry, the new fabrics, everything was new, so they became the power in Europe, because other countries, the winners, had another economy, so they were obsolete, and actually the Germans became the power.
You mean in the 80s and 90s?
Yes.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Well, that was the old
the
joke.
The situation of Germany was really much more terrible than the situation in America now. But it is true that in many countries, the extreme right-wing ideas are becoming stronger because of the refugees invasion and the disruption of...
They're calling it Trumpism. It's called Trumpism in America. That is spreading around the world, this retrieved nationalism.
Yes, for example, in France, there were already, like they say, that Muslims going to churches and destroy the arts, and because they think it's a sin.
They're actually destroying Christian churches in France?
Yes, there's a lot of violence, of racial violence in France since a long time ago. But they're like really going into the churches and destroying. So that was already shocking people a lot.
Yeah.
And last week, a priest was assassinated during mass. So he's not only destroying the churches, but now killing people. So people are reacting really...
Well, they are at war. And after that priest got killed, I don't know if it was said before, but seemingly the Prime Minister of Holland, whatever he is, president, he said, "We are now at war." That was the last straw to kill one of our priests. Right? So where are they going to go fight? Like, they have to figure out, well, how do we have a war? What are we up against? Lots of luck.
Yes. Is this talk again about these stereotypes of evil and good and
that's the android meme. TV body quadrant. You have to look at. You can break apart the different way the war will be expressed according to which quadrant you're looking at.
Hmm.
What you're talking about is TV iconography. TV can only be stereotypical. That's what you make photos of categories. Right, but it's not. But Trump on the chip body is faster than TV. He's reacting through his chip tweeting, creating a whole other level of things. So you got a five-bodied warfare going on. Many wars.
Yeah, that's the thing that's a good point that you said, Bob. That Trump is using all the bodies, and it's funny to see the Democrat response because they're trying to use the typical TV body images, like the guy said, Hitler, and then just the whole comments. Even you got the current president making jokes about the front runner in the Republican Party. And what it is that Trump is an outsider. Trump is not a professional politician, which is what Clinton and Obama came from. So he's really totally a Washington outsider. So, of course, they're going to use all the old stereotypes, like the guy used Hitler and whatever, to try to plant seeds in most people's minds that watch the television to say, oh, yeah, he's not good because of this and this and that. So it's fun to watch. It's really fun to watch. And that point you brought out about the Trump using all the bodies and he's observing himself, like, what is it, Hillary had his name 22 times. That's
yeah.
He's really analyzing
times
himself.
He's analyzing the media forms, not the content. He's not taking it personally. And I think the younger people who grew up with a chip body don't know any of the TV, I can argue, they're responding to that part of Trump.
Yeah.
He's more like them. Okay, so this guy, so he's saying, of course, foreign data theft is nothing to laugh at, but the pilferage of old yoga schedules and plans for a wedding long consummated hardly seem the kind of thing to require the involvement of an old CIA director long retired. See, it's overkill in the wrong body. So he says, and well, calling Russia an adversary seems unnecessarily dramatic. It wasn't long ago that Clinton's obscure Obama administration colleague, Barack Obama, was laughing at the previous wild-eyed lunatic nominated by Republicans as their presidential candidate, Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney called Russia a foe. Okay, let's do this. So here's Obama back in 4 years ago making fun of Romney calling Russia an enemy, a foe. But now his associate, Leonard Panetta, is saying that Trump is like Romney. No, they're doing the opposite. They're saying, no, my God, he's working with the foe. But the Democrats don't consider Russia a foe. But when Trump is doing what he's doing, releasing the emails, then he's not allowed to be working with the foe. You get that point, eh? So the Republicans are saying at one point that Russia is not a foe, and now they're saying it is a foe, and it's dangerous what Trump is doing. So that's what he's saying here. And while calling Russia an adversary seems unnecessarily dramatic, it wasn't long ago that Clinton's obscure Obama administration colleague, a guy named Barack Obama, was laughing at the previous wild-eyed lunatic nominated by Republicans as their presidential candidate. Mitt Romney had called Russia a foe, foe in quotes. Then there's a quote from Obama. Obama smirked this. The 1980s are now calling to ask for their foreign policy back because the Cold War has been over for 20 years, Obama smirked. I guess that was about Romney. The 1980s are calling to ask for their foreign policy back because the Cold War has been over for 20 years. Perhaps, and then the journalist says, perhaps it was funny because Romney used a one-syllable word when any worthy Oval Office aspirant would use at least three or preferably seven syllables. Then he says, before the convention, Hillary Clinton herself launched an attack on Trump that blew past titters and giggles and straight into guffaw territory. There's a good sign, a good sentence. So she said something. It went past the titter zone, the giggle zone, and went right into guffaw territory. Trump is everybody still there? I'm not getting any laughter or any feedback. Are we still here? All right.
Yeah.
Trump is what? It's funny? Did I hear the word funny? Can you give me a funny?
It is.
All right. Yeah, Trump is terrifying enough with the power of social media, Hillary Clinton intoned. But, quote, imagine if he had not just Twitter and cable news to go after his critics and opponents, but also the IRS. So Hillary thinks that he's going to sick the IRS on everybody. I don't know what you did all this stuff. I mean, you have to track these idiots. Trump, he says, the journalist says, Trump is terrifying enough with the power of social media. She intoned. So he's not saying that. She's saying that. He's terrifying enough. But imagine if he had not just Twitter and cable news to go after his critics and opponents, but also the IRS. Hillary's problem is she's trying to be tough and out mean Trump. Trump is extreme yelling at her, but she makes clear sentences and tries to make it logical. She can't win. She's got to start saying illogical things. Like Trump's a Rumpelstiltskin. He listens to Ion. He takes the RNA drops. We can't have a president that takes the RNA drops. That's never been proven satisfactorily safe by the FDA. She's being too logical in her trying to be mean. All right? Are you with me, people? Are you getting it?
Good.
Yes.
Yeah. So then the journalist says, yes, imagine a president who would abuse the powers of the IRS. not to paint Clinton with the unfair and overbroad brush of guilt by association, but the administration in which she served as Secretary of State twice accidentally released the private taxpayer information of its political opponents. So Hillary's forgotten that she did. She unleashed the IRS on people. Right? She released the private taxpayer information of its political opponents at moments that perhaps inadvertently were politically damaging. So this guy is pointing out that, he's trying to be nice to her, not to paint Clinton with the unfair and overbroad brush of guilt by association, but the administration in which she served as Secretary of State twice accidentally released the private taxpayer information of its political opponents at moments that perhaps inadvertently were politically damaging. And then there was the targeting of the administration's Tea Party opponents by the Obama administration IRS while Clinton was coincidentally serving as Secretary of State. So he went after the Tea Party. For non-political reasons, no doubt, the Obama administration is still fighting in court to keep the full details of those events from the public eye. He's saying for non-political reasons, no doubt, but what about political reasons? But anyways, Clinton forgot what she did. She's identified with unleashing the IRS. So that's a balanced point that this guy's saying. Then the journalist says, then on Thursday night in her big speech, Clinton attacked Trump again. She rightly pointed out that all a foreign leader has to do to get a rise out of Trump is launch a malicious tweet. This is what she said. God save us when Trump can respond to digital provocations by replying with megatons instead of megabytes. So they're trying to say that chip body would translate into the chemical body. No tweet would ever get a response from Clinton. She doesn't respond unless she gets served with a subpoena. Engraved in stone, in triplicate. So here's Trump hyper-responding, and this guy's pointing out that Clinton never responds. And then we're coming to the end. Which brings us to another Trumpian weakness. The guy is hiding his tax returns in an effort to avoid public scrutiny of whether he has fulfilled his most basic duty as an American. That is, to pay his fair share to support the nation we all love. He should release those tax returns now. But then he goes, and here come those titters again. So I guess he's going to show how Clinton blows it on this level. And here comes those titters again. Who are the very last people on the planet who could possibly lecture Trump on the need for openness? That would be anyone who thinks Clinton should be the next president of the United States. So who are the last people to think who could possibly lecture Trump on the need for openness? All those that support Clinton. That would be anyone who thinks Clinton should be the next president. So they're the ones who would think, who could possibly lecture Trump on the need for openness. Then he says, yes, when Trump becomes our president. So did you guys get the logic there? Here come those titters again. Who are the very last people on the planet who could possibly lecture Trump on the need for openness? The Clinton people.
Yeah.
They can't because they've never been open. They don't even tweet. So he says, yes, when Trump becomes our president in January. Now, this is a journalist who's in USA Today. He can't look like he's on either side. He can't be dumb from the smart people, so he has to support Hillary a little bit. But he has to be realistic and say, well, look what Trump's doing. So how is he going to end off his column? He says, there is no way I would ever vote for a guy. Okay? He says, when Trump becomes our president in January, it will be a disaster. He's got that covered. He's on Hillary's side. There is no way I would ever vote for a guy with the temperament of a rabid weasel. The maturity of a drunk... the temperament of a rabid weasel, the maturity of a drunken kindergartner... That's like those kids we were listening to on the doing the games. The maturity of a drunken kindergartner and the depth of a California reservoir. He has no depth. If we're lucky, he'll get himself impeached during the transition. It's our only hope, Chad, if Trump gets impeached during the transition. So he's saying he's the worst person, and obviously intelligent people should vote for Hillary. But he goes, but I don't care how much Hillary Clinton spends on attack ads revealing the full awful truth about Donald Trump. As long as she is talking, nobody's going to hear a word over all the laughter. That's how he ends the thing. Everybody's laughing at her. As long as she is talking, nobody's going to hear a word over all the laughter. So she has to stop talking. Got to start attacking another level, which he won't do. So you've got old-fashioned rationality against modern four-bodied quadriphenia. That's the battle today.
You know, the one thing I noticed, Bob, is the National Convention for the Republicans, you know, had people on speaking different points of view. You go over to the Democratic Convention, and it had every single group, offshoot, transgender, everything you could possibly think of was on that stage or mentioned abortion. A woman who had an abortion spoke, you know, and wanted to give her point of view. I mean, there was nothing. They found, you know, Leon Panetta coming up and speaking. I mean, it was desperate, you know, to get some traction, you know, to
You're
show.
You're saying
that
there was no respectable, well-employed, high-salaried yuppies on there. They were all street factions.
No, it wasn't just that. It was the fact that they took everything that supposedly the Republican Party doesn't stand for, and they put everybody up on stage. So we're going to appeal to everybody. You know, the Republicans get this little slice, but we are everybody else. And look, and they all spoke. And I was just, I was kind of not embarrassed, not because of the content, but to me it looks so completely contrived and fake and disgusting, you know, that, and I'm out
of
that.
Have a position.
Them. Yeah, I was just like, whoever put this together was really scraping the bottom of the barrel to get this to look coherent.
Well, you can see who put it together. If you look at the documentary, The Circus, which I'll have to watch it this weekend to see during a break here to see what they did over the Hillary convention. I saw them at the end of the Trump, and that was very biased against Trump. But what are they going to do? How are they going to present this one? But they show you the people managing her campaign in Brooklyn, and they have a loser, dowdy, frumpy quality to them. They look like losers. You know?
It was bad. In fact, I had my son's birthday tonight, and, you know, he had two of his friends, a male and a female, both in their early 30s, both with different points of view than his, and he actually scrutinized Trump's acceptance speech, you know, the eloquence of it and his ability to speak and handle
himself. I missed what you're saying. He's got two girls there,
a boy and a girl, a friend. They both had different points of view. One supported Clinton. The other one was on the fence. My son supports Trump. Listening to the three of them converse, you know, just watching them.
Yeah.
And the one that supported Clinton, only is doing it because she can't stand Trump. The one who can't decide which side of the fence to go on doesn't like either one of them and is just figuring he's just not going to vote because neither one of them makes any sense. You know, and it was interesting to see a microcosm, you know,
And what what about your son? How did he come across?
He liked the eloquence, you know, of Trump, you know, on his speech. And he said, you know, at least he's verbalizing and bringing this stuff to the surface. He goes, you know, Hillary and everyone else has forever put everything under the rug. You don't talk about it. We don't look at it. We don't speak about it. He goes, if nothing else gets accomplished, at least this is getting accomplished. You know, he goes, our generation has a chance. The things that we did not like and saw, you know, before him is at least getting verbalized, which I agreed with. I thought that was well stated.
Right. Well stated. So Bernie is known to bring the swept under the rug issues, you know, before the table. And I don't know if Trump has seen bringing these issues forward.
He's verbalizing them. But you know, like, let's build a wall to keep, you know, Mexico out.
Yeah.
You know, let's, you know, deal with ISIS head on. Things like that that nobody's talking about. You know, he just makes quirky statements, but at least he's bringing them to the surface, you know, where people have a chance to talk and examine them.
Well, Bernie Sanders did that, but he did it rationally. His hero was FDR. But he's old-fashioned, you know. He's not practical. Almost Trump is practical, but our world is nuts, and practical people don't know that being nuts is practical today because you're up against an enemy that's not sane. So the confusion on so many levels is what's fun about this election. This is the most exciting election in the world. Well, it's not an election; it's fucking confusion going on.
Oh, it's pandemonium. It really, truly, it is. And
it's not educated citizens expressing their literate points of view about the issues of the day. It's people with gang warfare going, drive-by protests. And you see what Bernie did? He left the Democratic Party. He's gone back to being an independent. So he, total fraud, he goes in, infiltrates the Democratic Party, exploits it to become president. When he loses, he says, I'm leaving you fuckers. I'm going to become an independent again. Did you guys know that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I read that, yes.
Yeah.
But couldn't you also look at, well, look at it in the other way, that he said he was so disgusted he just gave up and left. You know,
yeah. Did you see him crying at his brother's vote?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Look at that. His brother says, I nominate. He didn't say the great state of wherever he's from. He gets so personally involved. He said it. He said, I vote for my brother. And then started crying. Forgot to do the formal language, it seemed to me. I replaced. What? And he said, I vote? No, man. You represent the state. Anyway, I'm only watching one 0.5% of this shit, and it's too much for me. I just crack up. I fall all over the place. I can't get anything done. I can't find the great ion humor that I must broadcast. Trump keeps getting in the way.
Well, typically in an election, there's like a limited number of talking points, and all the candidates they might disagree on position of what those like 25 talking points or issues are.
Yeah.
And in this election, and in the state of the U.S. the way it is right now, it's like they can't even agree what the issues are. Like, there's Trump's version of the world, and then there's Clinton's version of the world, and they don't meet.
Back in the 60s, I'd read the underground newspapers, and everybody would be outraged. The literate baby boomers outraged that Nixon or McGovern, whoever was running for president, would not discuss the issues. And Nixon and them actually did talk about the issues, but, you know, very minutely. But there are, since Reagan or something, there haven't been any issues allowed to be discussed. It's just personality, cultural warfare, image sniping, which McClellan predicted. But when you go back to how people were upset at the low level of issue contention in the 60s, if those people were alive today, they really would think that Saturday Night Live was running America or something. They literally think that. Look at Deloitte, that Canadian Lorne, whatever his name is, runs Saturday Night Live, took over the state. Lorne Michaels. That's how he
started. Not only that, but from what you just, from that article you just read, it sounds like the way that Trump replies, like, knee-jerk reactions to these different world leaders on Twitter. It's like, is that where it's going now? The different world leaders are going to attack each other on Twitter.
Yeah, you know what McClellan predicted? He said in the future, we'll go back to medieval conditions where the generals of the armies or of the different countries, the top guys, will have a duel. So they had to go back to no stupid election, just the two representatives have a duel. Well, he didn't foresee that they would have a software 24/7 tweeting duel. Now, he did write about the knights. Remember, the knights would have their jousts and that, and they would do what was called slanging. They would insult each other verbally. They'd have, it's like the rap guys who have those slanging competitions, the rap competition. That's what Trump is taking it to. What runs the world? Hip-hop as a cultural image. So he's hip-hopping, tweeting, and doing medieval slanging at hyper speed. And people think that they can still go back and have a literate education in the old format.
Right.
And, you know, you take Kim's son. He liked Trump because Trump reacted. That's not anything to do with
issues. When people say something about Trump in the media, like, Donald Trump, when I knew him and blah, 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 he did this wrong and this wrong, Trump's response is always the same. I don't even know who this guy is. No, he's better.
I didn't know me. Yeah, he takes the personal level, which you can have in our world. We have a human scale where anybody can talk to anybody else through tweeting or Facebooking. You know, I've interacted with a lot of people that I haven't talked to in 40 years. You can find them and talk to them on the thing, you know, on Facebook. There's a huge human scale level of retrieval going on, That's another part of this thing. So Trump can say, with the assumption that, well, everybody's in touch with everybody, and I can meet anybody I want to, anybody in the world, because I can call them up or Facebook them, and so he can cite that. I never met this guy. He had no reason to talk about me. So it's not based on reading anything about Trump, whether it's whether you met him or not. That's a hyper-personal human scale that's happening with this digital media. It's another effect.
Your commentary on politics is so different, Bob, than anything.
That's right. I know what I'm talking about.
That's
my opening comment.
I mean,
if I was interviewed by Charlie, well, what do you think of Trump? Well, he's the greatest scientist, artist alive today. That'd have to shut down the interview right there. But what do you mean? He's not a scientist. You know, at least he is. Don't you know what science is? It's the word making the market. It's altering human consciousness. Haven't you read The Noetic Policies of William Aaron Thompson? I could cite chapter and verse all this crap that nobody knows what I'm talking about. But there are books that support me.
You'd have him so tongue-tied. You really would have him tongue-tied.
I have everybody tongue-tied. Look at you people. You barely get a sentence out.
That's true.
All you can say is, you're great, Bob. Praise Bob, like I did. Praise Bob. Praise Bob. His tongue's faster than mine. The fastest tongue in the West. Darting mouth. But, yeah, it's different. Yep, very different. That's why we have to be I have to be interviewed every week to download what's going on. That's Roxy's project. Let's document what this fastest mouth is saying this week.
But you know what's great, though, about the election and Trump and everything is it's helped, like, it's spurred a lot of content here on these shows for us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I know that it's always going to be doing it because we're the only real valid, interesting commentators. So we're always going to, I'm going to make damn sure the world goes nuts so we have an interesting payday. That's guaranteed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I want to make this, now I'm just making sure. Have you dropped off, Roxy? Yes, you dropped out. Holy shit, 20 minutes ago. That's not very nice. Okay, I'm gonna play some music and then we'll continue just to fill in. See, I want Roxy to hear this stuff so that she can ask me interesting questions. I'm only doing this for the videos, or I'm doing the videos for the radio show. As she says, we make the longest commercials out there, an hour and a half commercials, with Bob explaining every secret to the universe. How's that for an infomercial? Okay, so we got to go over to, I guess, so many stuff here. Green. Okay. Okay, we haven't got time for fucking music.
Yes, and I have something to say because...
Oh, good news, guys. Roxy was hearing us. She put on her computer, so she didn't miss all that wisdom in the last 20 minutes.
No, because I was telling you that there are things like what happened with Napoleon and the Nazis. There are many aspects of the... For example, their ideology or things they were doing that some historians think they were just crazy, megalomaniac, because of the way you explained it, the deepest hidden ground, one can see they were actually in the knowing of
what was involved.
Of these technologies,
yeah.
And because they were trying to retrieve a new type of energy, they called it vril.
Well, remember, Roxy, Ion says they did retrieve it. They came with incredible inventions, which Thomas Pynchon shows in Gravity's Rainbow. They did. They were successful.
Yes, and that's why when people may.
They didn't lose.
They think
that's why they went. It's just like us. We're going to have to
Trump.
Go. We're going to be so successful. We're going to have to go stealth to go to the next level of power.
Yeah, because we can really understand that from the royal blood, then the transition with the Freemasons and the French Revolution and the printed money, the industry, all the thunders of the electric environment, and then the Nazis and how they use the technologies and how they develop other technologies. And one starts re-evaluating and understanding what we think it happened, this thing we call history, which is not linear. but it all makes sense. For example, why Napoleon went to Egypt and was trying to retrieve all these things, and they have the collection of Egyptian objects in the Louvre. And one may think it was just a crazy idea they had, and no, it's not. They were really trying to do what you are doing.
Right. Let me add this. You said to me the other day that you don't have to be, you didn't say this plainly, but you don't have to be guilty about your aristocratic forebears, because you're finding out the aristocrats weren't bad people. Not all of them.
No. No, they really had a sense of they had to serve the people.
Right, and they would go for the best spiritual stuff.
They were working for them, and they had also to show the ideals they were serving.
Right. Hey, Chad. Are you there, Chad?
Yeah.
Did you know that Louis XIV and those kings had to heal people once a week?
What?
Literally.
No.
Yeah, she's finding this out. The history of Louis XIV, that he would meet with the people every day or every once a week and put healing hands on them and heal problems.
Wow. I had no idea.
Everybody could talk to the king, and everybody could get into the gardens. And
they had access to talking to him anytime they wanted to?
The royalty was not allowed. They had two meals per day. And they could not eat everything. They had to leave some of their food.
Right.
Because that will be given to the people.
Right. They almost lived like super monks. Well disciplined.
What country was that? Was that in all the countries of Europe, or just France? Or?
Yes. No, in all the countries.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, it was an important role to be king. You represented God, so you had to be sort of saintly.
The Sun King, he had amazing furniture made of silver in Versailles.
Yeah.
That each piece took years to make and design, and it was really amazing. Everything was made of silver. But because of the wars, he had to melt everything down. To make coins and to finance the religious war. But he said it was his duty to fight for his ideals as a Christian.
Right.
So many people think they were vain and they were really concern in creating a beautiful environment, but when they had to, for example, in the case of this king, he had to melt the furniture. He did it because for him the state and the people were more important, and they would really go and fight and go in the battles.
Right.
Really like.
Yeah. What is the phrase?
Because that was part of being in their power, that they had to show the people that they are in their power, and they're really.
They had to apply their power.
Royal blood.
Right. Wow. The quote was, to whom much is given, much is expected.
Hmm.
That was the code for aristocrats. So now what this shows is that when you bring in a new technology, as Alexander North Whitehead said, it destroys the previous society completely. So this king, they didn't understand the effects of new media. So this new media comes in and wipes everything out that they were very importantly managing, but they didn't know what the steam shovel with the steamships and the railroads and all this stuff would just wipe out the whole what's called the ancient regime and a whole new level of society.
There is another level in which one can see, for example, in the Louvre, they had the big plan. And for many generations, and even after the monarchy, the Freemasons burned part of the castle. But it was rebuilt again, and until now, they're always building there. And they have this big plan, so even if the system changes, there is a elite or some at some level some people are in the knowing of what is happening and yes, when I see, for example, this coin of Frank the First with the thing that looks like the money symbol, the S. But the cross is the three-level cross he uses.
Yeah.
It's a secret symbol. And he ascended to throne in 1515 that greets ISIS. And now we see all these things happening in France and the ISIS terrorists and these.
Oh, yeah, you're seeing the ISIS is attacking, and that came from his image.
Well, the 1515 greets like ISIS. And,
1515. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
I don't think these things are just by chance.
Right.
It's like they were really in the knowing, and like Leonardo shows him these amazing things he did.
Well, didn't we ask? Did I ask Ion in my private session yesterday? Did I play it? Or did we ask him today if Leonardo knew the future? It got expressed today, got said.
Yeah, well, he has said several times that he did.
Right, and did we do that live with him, or was that a recording I played?
I think both.
Okay. All right, so look, you only got an hour.
That's the thing with what you're doing and Trump, that these effects of media go beyond what we can explain if we just look at the objects, like Trump as the president.
Yeah, if you bring what books and newspapers say about something, you're bringing the wrong media, the wrong information about what's going on. That's why, Kim, I say things so different. I'm not using normal marking points. I'm just looking at what is. I'm not referring to what books or anybody says. I'm just saying, well, look, I know how to look at this phenomenon. I know he's spread everywhere. So let's do the tetrad on radio. So radio enhances simultaneous access to the entire planet. Quote, on the air, you're everywhere. It obsolesces wires and cables and physical bodies. It's the end of rational and lineal. It's the end of Euclidean space. And it's the end of Western time and space. It retrieves tribal ecological environments. Well, he has right after that. It retrieves tribal ecological environments. That's trauma, paranoia, and the primacy of the right hemisphere of the brain. Radio was the hidden ground to the figure of the retrieved prohibition of drug abuse in the television age. So the banning of LSD and all that stuff in the 60s was the hidden ground for that was the radio prohibition of alcohol. So radio was the hidden ground to the figure of the retrieved prohibition of the 60s, prohibitioning drug abuse in the television age. All right? So to replay, alcohol in the radio age, drugs in the television age. So what does radio flip into? It world reverses into talking picture. That's in quotes, a talking picture. And it has a dash and it says, audience as actor participating in its own actor experience. Audience as actor participating in its own actor experience. Okay. So that's something to think about. But what I wanted to read you is the tetrad on verbum. Now, you know, we say when you speak, you're being verbal. Well, for grunting, what do you call grunting? Well, the word is verbum, V-E-R-B-U-M. In brackets, it means utterance. So Ian was saying to me or something the other day that the grunting of the caveman was better than the words of the sophisticated literate person. It had more power. So here's McLuhan giving a tetrad on this grunting, verbum. A, it intensifies and crystallizes percept, as opposed to the concept, dash, as word, in brackets, thing. So the power of the word. So the verbum crystallizes percept, and percept is defined as word or thing. It obsolesces the merely sensory via perceptual interplay. So the merely just looking at the world you're in on one dimensional, that's obsolesced, because by speaking, you're starting to interact with the sensory world. You create another track, or just grunting. So that creates tactile, perceptual interplay. What does it retrieve? Dig this. Transference of power from things to word as vortex. You know how Roxy goes on about vortex? You just heard her scream. Pick her up. She fainted. But what did it, that's an ionic, well, ionic statement, the old ion. So power was in things, and it got shifted to word as a medium, as a vortex. That's what verbum gruntering retrieves, the transference of power from things to word as vortex. What does it flip into? It reverses into the conceptual, which is the replay of meaning minus the experience. That's what Ian's complaining about everybody. They go around with these conceptual meanings for everything that they never experience, like the instant replay. So this actual power of the word flips into non-powerful of the word, because the meaning takes over from the word power. What does something mean? That is a lessened state. But it's a novelty when it happens, right? You go from percept, everybody's bored with having word power, so okay, let's make our words stupid. Let's emphasize the fucking meaning. Let's write it down and memorize the meanings. That was a great thing to do as a novelty. But it was going backwards in terms of the power of the word. So you get that? Isn't that a pretty good tetrad?
Yeah.
I'll have to type it up. Transference of power from things to word as vortex. That's hyphenated. Word as vortex. This McLuhan guy, he was pretty close. I mean, nobody even knows about verbums, and he's already making a very profound tetrad on it. Right? That's why Finney's women have a lot of grunting in it. Not complete sentence, not even complete words. It has to have verbum. Okay. If we want to hear verbum, we just listen to Corbin. Give us some verbum, Corbin. Grunt.
Why?
That's right. There's a verbum. Why? Yeah. The verbum. Corbin's the most powerful ionaut. He goes into verbum immediately. Word is,
yep.
You're expressing word as vortex, right, Corbin?
Right. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, well, let's play some audio. Let's get in some good stuff here just because time's running out. Thank you, Corbin. Thank you and good night. I will now mute everybody. And if we get some really good stuff going, we might have to go an hour past our normal shutoff at 11, my time, 11. So he's coming up to 10 o'clock, so we might have to go 2 hours if we're too far blocked, backed up. So Kyle said some interesting things. He said, this is not Trump versus Hillary. This is positive versus negative. Again, electronic in nature. He also says, this is the beginning of the end based on the present electronic nature. This is a, how did they get that? It won't stay there. I have to wait till it gets another condition for moving. My thing overreaches.